It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. I guess you might say Jeff Nieslanek is the dedicated survivor today. He's not with us, the president of the Mount Sopris Conservation District. We do have Charles Ryden, who's president of the Bookcliff Conservation District, and Brett Jolly is president of Southside. Peter Dodd is the secretary and treasurer of Southside. We've been having these conversations on a monthly basis for the last several months. Still, we can go over the foundation stuff. I don't know who wants to take this one. What is a conservation district?
Well, it was developed back in the Dust Bowl days to help them people that where the wind was blowing and blowing topsoil away. And so they developed conservation districts to mitigate that.
And how do they do that?
Well, they taught them how to strip farm and different things so that they had grass and then ground and then grass and things like that, that to keep the dust from our topsoil blowing off into the neck like it's doing sometimes now.
I know in this day and age, the conservation districts are able to give a number of grants to people that own farms and agricultural uses. In some cases, irrigation projects get some grants from the conservation districts. How does that tie in with that concept that started back in the Dust Bowl days, 80, 90 years ago?
Well, the districts, when they were set up, were to teach good farming practices. So they used to plow everything up, and then the Dust Bowl hit. And so part of it was they set up the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and under that, every community could set up a conservation district. And how many of them are there in the state of Colorado? There's 67.
Something like that.
But if you go clear across the country, you'll see the signs. You're entering such and such conservation district. But so we work hand in hand, and the conservation districts are elected boards. We're all elected in our each out of our communities. There's three in this valley, as Gabe mentioned. So we work hand in hand, and the NRCS supplies soil managers, conservation, range management, help with grants with the other Farm Service Agency, which is another side of the federal agencies. But so we get money from the state, and in Garfield County, our commissioners support us very much. So they help us, and we take the experts what they say, and we take it to our landowners. So if a farmer has an issue or a rancher has an issue, they can come in and talk to the NRCS folks and find out what the best management practice is or how to do what they want to do. And then we help supply with some grants and depend on its irrigation or range or.
And there are a number of different types of grants that they get.
Correct.
For
yeah.
Irrigation, of course, is the one we mentioned. You also do grants that help with soil erosion, seeding trees.
Right.
And just general education. Now, Charles, I know you've been involved in farming all your life. You know, you were past president of the Colorado Cattlemen's Association, and you've been involved in the Farm Bureau since,
yes.
I think, the beginning of time. Brett, when did you first get involved with the conservation districts?
I've been a member since 2001, and my father before me. They really are the key if you own land. To learn how, especially if you're new property owners, to come in and learn. We put a pamphlet out. The realtors have them for new landowners, and every new landowner is supposed to get one to alleviate the stress between the ranchers and the farmers, and have somebody new that comes in to help them. You know, the conservation district, the word conservation has been usurped by certain groups.
It's a little cliche today.
It really is. I mean, you got the Nature Conservancy, Roaring Fork Conservancy District. They use the word conserve, but really conservation is the wise use of natural resources without waste. That truly is the definition of conservation. And it's not preservation. It's the wise use of your natural resources.
It's interesting, as we're talking about all this, I'm thinking there might be some overlap between what the services that are available and the grants that are available from the Soil Conservation Service, the conservation districts, as well as the NRCS with Extension. And of course, I was just seeing what Sherry Pro had sent us here, and there it is right there. You actually do work with CSU Extension.
We do.
As well as Garfield County and other agencies to try and help landowners in general. Is there, this day and age, people that are buying large tracts of land that you might use for farming or ranching, you would think wouldn't need to worry about conserving. But that is a consideration for those people, isn't it?
For sure. The weeds, the noxious weeds, we run the noxious weed program along with mm-hmm. Steve Anthony from Garfield County. We supply the grants and we go through the applications. But any new landowner needs to know about noxious weeds. A lot of them by the places and the irrigation and their ditches and water. And of course, we don't get in with the water rights, but we will help fix ditches and working with the best management practices, irrigation systems, tell them what to do. And we do grants with, the big guys like you're talking about usually have a property manager, and we deal a lot with them.
Since I've joined the conservation.
I was wondering when you were going to jump in here, because Sherry said, Peter has a great sense of humor, and you've been quiet. We haven't heard from you at all. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Since I joined, I primarily joined to network when I joined the conservation district to meet people, not just in our local area, but I went to CACD last year, and I met people from all over the state.
What does that stand for?
It's a Colorado Association of Conservation Districts, so it's all the conservation districts consolidate to one area, and they have a meeting.
It's kind of like the trade show, you might say,
right,
for conservation districts.
It's the trade show, and most of these conservation districts, they're all underfunded, so I'm amazed that the people that show up, because it is a volunteer, they're very dedicated to deal with this stuff. And since I've joined the conservation district, I've learned about the weeds on my property. I've learned about conservation practices, how to improve irrigation systems, we ran a no-till drill, and we haven't used it yet, but we've cut some property. We thought about using the no-till drill and about planting grasses and what grasses to plant, because on our property, which is a large piece, we need to reseed. We need to introduce grass species again, because our species aren't doing as well, the grass species that are there, the plants. And so we're thinking about maybe tilling it up, or maybe no-till is a better option. And so the conservation district is a great outlet to learn from and to kind of get a better idea of what to do on your property, because it is a very costly, expensive process to till up your ground and to reseed.
I hear about the no-till drill every year at Ag Day, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure I totally understand how it works or what it is. It's a piece of equipment.
Correct.
That the conservation districts own that you can, is it borrow or
we
is it rent?
Out. Okay. We rent out for a nominal fee. And you don't have to till your ground up. You can take it right over bare ground. You might spray the weeds or the grass first and kill what's there. But you don't have to plow and disc and harrow and then use a regular drill. It's really heavy. You got to have a fairly good-sized tractor to pull it. Okay. It's only 8 foot wide, so you don't get a big swath. We bought a small one just because of that, because most people don't have 150-horse tractors around here. And it's used a lot.
And if anybody has any would like to talk about the no-till drill, I imagine that they probably have folks that work at the office out there that could probably give you a lesson, if you will.
And that's a big thing, back in the Midwest, is everyone was tilling, and now a lot of them are going to no-till drilling to introduce cover crops into their corn and stuff like that and soybeans.
The idea being that, you, like you say, you don't have to plow it up and then disc it and harrow it.
And then don't have the wind to blow.
You don't have the wind blowing your dirt away.
Which is kind of the whole point of the conservation districts back from the Dust Bowl days. Now, if anybody has any questions, obviously all three of the conservation districts have websites. I want to say it's Southside CD, Book Cliff CD, and MountSopriscD.org, right?
Correct.
So they can always check out the websites, and of course they can call the, I call it the federal building, but they can call the office, and I'm trying to remember what the main number is. It's
945-5494.
5494. So you can call out there and just ask a question. And so it's Farm Service Agency, NRCS, the conservation districts are all based out of that same office.
Yeah.
And they can direct you to the correct person to answer your question.
Yes.
We have employees that we will send out that will come out and go over your property with you and tell you or show you what you need or answer any questions you have.
Including Mike Kishimoto, who retired a couple years ago and yet still is working, which is, it's almost like Charles Sister, who I think retired 3-4 times from teaching. Something like that. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about the conservation districts in our area. Again, if you have any questions, you are a landowner and you've got a specific problem that you'd like to talk about. You'd like to talk about the no-till drill, maybe. If it actually thaws out eventually, I think we could have a pretty good growing season based on the winter we had. But
it looks real good.
Yeah, right, fingers crossed, right? Mm-hmm. Phone number is 945-5494. Back in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking with a couple of presidents of local conservation districts, Charles Ryden from Book Cliff, Brett Jolly from Southside, and then Peter Dodd is the secretary and treasurer of Southside Conservation District. I'm still waiting for the stand-up routine, by the way. Again, conservation districts came from the Dust Bowl years of the 1930s, one of FDR's alphabet soup, if you will. You know, I actually saw something on Facebook the other day about executive orders. FDR actually signed the most executive orders per year and through the course of his presidency. And the conservation districts are one of those executive orders that he created back, as you say, during the Dust Bowl. I want to say eastern Colorado suffered from Dust Bowl. It was primarily Oklahoma and the Midwestern states.
And southeastern Colorado.
Southeastern, okay. So down like Lamar, that kind of area.
Right, out on Arkansas.
I want to say the local conservation districts were founded like around the 50s sometime. Do they go back all the way to World War II era?
No, you're right. The local districts, I believe, were put together in the early 50s.
Yeah, because I've been on it since 40 years probably, but the president off and on for 35. So, but anyway, yeah, and the back then and later in the earlier part of the years, boy, we just hardly. We got a little bit of money to work with, but through sort of a due type thing. But we didn't have anything. We couldn't hardly do anything. And then we thought that was going to get worse. But then come along grants, and the NRCS got big grants, and they've got a lot of money in the last few years we spent, and got a lot of projects this year. It was over $1.5 million. So and then the counties come through with a lot. So. EQIP don't do a project. You can't get that way. You can go through the round table and that way and get grants to do projects. And usually they're 50-50 or 70 or 60-40 or whatever. And then the county has got for small projects, it's got a grant system so people can look into that too.
The history of the conservation districts almost seems like it's one of those. Obviously, there was a need for it, you know, back in the 30s, the Dust Bowl, trying to help, you know, farmers control all the topsoil just blowing away into the next state. And then it seems like interest was lost for a while. And then it's kind of come back a little bit more in the last few years with more grants coming from the federal level. One thing that is actually fairly new, actually, we've all heard about the Farm Bill because it, you know, there are all kinds of things included in that one Farm Bill, including what I forget what it's called now, but food stamps.
SNAP.
SNAP, thank you. But there have been some changes in the Farm Bill now that ditch companies can actually get some of the Farm Bill money and pass through grants from the NRCS and the conservation districts, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah, the conservation districts are sort of in charge of that money.
And so
it used to be really hard to get grants from the federal government for, because everything's a ranking system. Mm-hmm. And the more you go into drip your lines or center pivots. But the issue that we have in this valley and in Colorado really is ditch leakage, ditch seepage. And getting a grant just to pipe your ditches has always been really difficult. And they are changing that up now because it's very expensive to pipe a mile of ditch.
Yeah.
So, and that's always kind of been. The problem with doing that is, let's take Silt Mesa, for example. They've gone the sprinkler systems up there and they're piping ditches. All of a sudden, people's springs have been there for the last 80 years are drying up.
And the wells, water wells as well.
Their wells, right. And
so now we've got to mitigate that.
How do you mitigate that? And, if everybody goes to drip or sprinklers and every ditch is piped, how many people are going to all of a sudden find out they don't have water in their houses? A lot of ranchers depend on the people above them, the irrigating, for that flood water, excess water to come down, and they gather it up and use it again. Water usually gets used 5, 6, 7 times before it ever makes it back to the river.
So what I think you're referring to is what we call as TCP, is Targeted Conservation Practices or programs. And a person in our office wrote that to get funding for our area, Pitkin, Garfield County, to serve the conservation districts because we weren't getting served what we thought NRCS through their ranking system. We weren't getting funded those projects that we thought that were needed.
This is specific to our area.
This is specific to our area, and they set aside a certain amount of money. It's considerable.
We've received $1.5 million in the last several years just to improve irrigation ditches. This year, 2019, we've had 13 applications requesting $1,015,000 and been approved for $500,000. And this for ditch companies.
And again, most of those are cost shares.
Correct.
They are. Right. Everything's a cost share. You got to have some skin in the game.
Right.
And they figure how when you put things in, they got a cost docket, so somebody can't say, "Well, I used my tractor and I want 100 and something an hour for it." And
or labor.
So it
labor
keeps costs. Things.
It's not in kind. It's actual dollars.
It's correct. A realistic correct. Figure. So.
Gotcha. Absolutely. How often do your respective conservation district boards meet and talk about the like grants and stuff like that?
Monthly. Yes. We get together, and then more than that, really, we get together for other meetings.
Are you like any other volunteer board? Are you always looking for new members, looking for people to get involved?
Always. Yes.
Are there any requirements to be on one of the conservation district boards?
Just be an ag producer.
Right. You got to live in that district or have property in that district.
Yeah. Or a manager.
Or a manager.
Property.
Okay. And same phone number that we talked about before, if correct. Anybody is interested, 945-5494. Sherry would love to talk to you about, I'm sure that it's probably you give an application and then the board votes to accept you into the organization kind of thing? Or?
Yes.
That's pretty simple to get into. You don't have to fill out an application to get on the board. If there's an opening and the rest of the board feels that you're qualified, you're there, you get a job. And sometimes it's a lifetime
job. It's harder to get off than it is to get on, let's put it that way. But we actually had an election a couple of years ago in Bootcliff District. We had to hold a special election, and the whole community gets the vote. Remember? I forget who it was, but we actually had more people wanted to be on the board than we had slots for, which doesn't happen very often.
That's a good position to be in, actually. Yeah. The Ag Expo, of course, is passed for this year, but the Ag Expo is something that the conservation districts get together along with the NRCS and do every year. For the last couple, that's actually happened at the Garfield
service.
County. An extension, thank you, I'm sorry. Last couple of years, it's happened at the fairgrounds in the indoor arena. Is it what is it like going from the community center in Newcastle to a huge indoor space like that? Was it, did it work?
It's a whole different event. I mean, but when you're doing a little thing at the community center, you don't do much. But down there, you get dealers in and implement dealers, and you get...
It's like a little trade show.
Yeah. It's a trade show.
Anybody else remember the farm show that they used to have at the fairgrounds for several years there?
That's kind of what we're trying to get to.
And it's building. It's coming up and doing very well.
A lot of people getting interested in it. All this stuff happens in waves. You know, people may kind of let it go for a while, but then they'll get interested in it again.
When it's dry like last year, there's a lot of people interested. The true reason for the conservation districts are education, whether it be the Ag Expo or irrigation cost share.
Or workshops.
We put workshops on all the time. We're always doing stuff to try to get the community involved, and it's hard to get the community involved. We're such a small portion of the population anywhere. Right. It's hard to get people involved, but they all think they know what conservation means.
Well, anybody can Google the definition, right? Peter, it sounds like you're kind of the newest in the room here anyway, member of the conservation districts. Maybe you answered this before, but I'm going to ask you in a different way again, so maybe we'll get a different answer. The question is, what do you think is the most valuable thing that you have learned from your experience with the Southside Conservation District?
You know, pretty much the irrigated land, how much, irrigated lands there are in our area, and what improvements can we make, and how to get our people involved on our side, because we don't have storage like the other districts do. You know, and so we got to be a little more creative in how we use our water because we have it for such a limited time.
Well, and on the south side, you don't have storage and you don't have as much water either.
You know, and it's helpful to have the Farm Service Agency, the NRCS, in there to give advice when you go in because they're there already. I have a monthly meeting. I go in there. I have a question. I can ask them there right there. And that's a really beneficial to me as a landowner in that area. And anyone who asks a question, like my cousins or anyone in that area, friends or something, they have a question, I can go and ask them because I know these people and I have a good relationship with them now. You know, the more I'm on this board, the more I realize I don't really know anything, you know. You know, when you're young, you think you know everything. And then as you grow older, you know a little more. And then the more I find out, the more I realize I just don't know anything at all.
Mm-hmm. You still feel that way, Charles?
Yeah, it's a very complicated system. And people that think they know it all, they haven't got a clue what's really going on. And then we also watch the legislature. If something's going to affect us, we get involved. And I found an article the other day that I wrote back, I don't know how many years ago, and put in the paper. So
that's interesting. Mm-hmm. We've never talked about politics.
And we don't want to too much.
But. Right. Thank you. Well, you know, the two forbidden subjects, right? Mm-hmm. But are the conservation districts involved politically?
Not one side or the other.
Okay.
But if there's a bill coming up that's going to affect
agriculture
or farming or...
We have lobbyists.
Okay.
So our lobbying group is CACD, which is the Colorado Association of Conservation Districts.
Right, that we were talking about before.
Right, and I'm also the secretary of the watershed, the Colorado watershed. And so the way it works is our conservation district, like Southside, comes in and they have something they want to say. So we go to the watershed meeting, which is a collection of the Colorado headwaters all the way down to Grand Junction. So it's Mesa County, Garfield County, Eagle County, and Summit County. Kremlin up there.
And Grand County, right?
And Grand County.
Which is where the headwaters
are. Yeah. So we have a meeting. Usually we try to have two a year, but this year wasn't a possibility. So we'll have one meeting. If we have any concerns, we want to do a resolution or anything like that, it'll get passed on to CACD. We'll go to that meeting, and then they'll vote for it there. And the lobbying group will carry it forward from there.
And
that's how we express our politics and
conservation districts. Within the scope of the soil conservation districts.
Correct.
So you're not going to weigh in on the the popular vote bills that are kind of moving through right now. That's outside what you would be concerned about.
You know,
I'm sure Brett has an opinion about that, but he's not going to.
And for water, you know, the River District, the Colorado River District is kind of the lobbying group. And so it wouldn't be appropriate for us to kind of weigh in there. They're the lobbying group, and they're the ones that should carry it forward.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I have no opinions, Gabe.
That's okay. None of us do, I'm sure. Go ahead.
Well, there's one more section, right?
Yep.
We'll cover it in the next.
Sounds good. Back to wrap things up in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking about the three conservation districts in our area, Mount Soprus, Southside, and Bookcliff. We've got Charles Ryden from Bookcliff, Brett Jolly, and Peter Dodd from Southside. Again, if you have any questions about anything you hear today, maybe these cost shares for irrigation or the noxious weed programs, you can call the federal office. It's 945-5494. That's the Farm Service Agency, NRCS, the conservation districts, all in that same office. Again, at 945-5494. We didn't really talk a lot about the noxious weed program. We've talked, obviously, with Steve Anthony in the past and with CSU Extension about noxious weed programs, but obviously this plays right into the conservation district's wheelhouse, because this is one of the reasons why conservation districts exist, is to get rid of those noxious weeds that either can be invasive, can kill other stuff that you actually want to grow, can have health side effects in some cases. And I think it was Brett, was talking about how supportive the current Garfield County commissioners have been of the conservation districts and noxious weed program specifically.
So this is the 20th year that we've partnered with Garfield County to help producers and landowners treat the noxious weeds on their property. Garfield County funds the program, and the districts assist with mapping and administration of the program. It has been very successful, and we generally disperse all the funds available. Applications must be on time and complete, and I can't stress that enough. Call Jonathan, who is one of our district employees, at 404-3438, Jonathan, for free mapping of your noxious weeds. He will come out and walk through with you and show you what you have and tell you the different options you have to remove them, and there are many different options. Mapping will help you identify and plan when to treat and when, because a lot of them you want to do in the fall before they go dormant.
That's interesting. I would think that the spring would be a better time, but that's not always the case.
No. There's a few white top you want to get in the spring, and everybody's seen white top, especially if you're in Newcastle. Hoary crest.
Yeah.
You see it come up early, and it's gone.
And this, it's not just for out in the sticks area, in the rural area. You know, we do a lot of funding for HOAs and subdivisions, Carbondale, Glenwood, Newcastle.
When Steve Anthony from Garfield County came in to talk about noxious weeds, it was surprising how many people that actually live in town that you wouldn't expect actually had these noxious weeds growing. What about cheatgrass? That's got to be on the list.
No, it's not considered.
No kidding.
There's so much, I guess, it's not considered a weed.
I don't know. If you've ever had it in your sock, I think you would disagree.
I'm not sure if anybody has enough money to touch it.
That's a very good point. Remember after that fire about 10 years ago on the front of Jolly Mesa, actually, when it started growing back and how purple it looked? And that was all cheatgrass, I guess. I didn't realize it looked that color when it was just in the early stages.
We had a Type 2 fire crew up there, and when it was about out, I was sitting and talking to the guys in charge, and they told me they'd never seen cheatgrass that tall anywhere. And it was even underneath the canopies of the cedar trees, juniper trees, which usually
doesn't grow anything.
No.
But again, it's not considered.
And this year, there's going to be a lot of it.
Yeah, because of all the snow and how wet and moist it is. That's always everything is a double-sided. You know, we're talking about piping ditches to alleviate evaporation and seepage, and then you have the problem with groundwater because people rely on that seepage to recharge their wells. Exactly. It's kind of the same thing with the snowpack. You hear about a good snowpack year in the winter, and depending on what summer moisture and precipitation is like, it could be a bad fire year. You just never know. And that's a little off topic, but nope. I hadn't really gotten off topic yet this time, so I guess it's about time. I'm overdue.
That's the way it is, you know. It is that. And we try to basically just try to make things as good or better than they were when we started working with it. So,
other things that we haven't talked about as well, you do some high school scholarships as well through the conservation districts. Are these just general scholarships, or do you give scholarships specifically to kids that are looking to go into agriculture of some kind?
Yes, most of the time the committee goes through and picks what they feel the best one.
Best candidate.
To have their get them scholarships.
And it's usually for ag-related.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Speaking of going around and looking at what the neighbors are doing to solve certain problems, once every summer you also do the tour de farms.
Correct.
And again, this is an opportunity for folks to kind of see how other people are doing things, be it irrigation or just different ways of growing crop.
So we hosted it last year, the tour de farms, which is a bike ride. And you usually stop at a few people's property and they come out and talk to you, and my family was one of those places they stopped in the middle. And so it was a rather complicated ride, I thought it would be for them, but they actually pulled it off pretty well. And so we talk about, you know, our family and what we do on the property and anything related, you know, future, past, stuff like that. It's just to get people more involved in ag and to understand ag.
You also do some workshops from time to time.
Yes.
To help local landowners. Anybody know when the next one is?
It is.
I don't know where
it's a
small acreage.
We're partnering with Garfield County to offer a Healthy Lands open house on Saturday, May 18th at the Silt Preserve. Garfield County Vegetation, your districts, Garfield County CSU Extension, Aspen Valley Land Trust, Highway Feed, and Palisade Insectary will be on hand. This is an open house, so come visit with folks and stay for hot dogs and brats.
Where is that again?
It's in Silt on May 18th.
South side of the river.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, signs
along the frontage road. There will be a sign you'll see, and you'll be able to find it.
Okay. I was trying to follow the, and I'm thinking, okay, is it going to be at Leonard Davis's place? No, probably not. We'll keep going.
Yep.
Okay. So just follow the signs.
Where the gravel pits are, kind of.
Okay.
In that direction.
All right.
The big project that we're working on now and have been for the last year is a ditch inventory with the governor's water plan.
Right.
The three districts are partnering with the Middle Colorado Watershed. They're doing the non-consumptive use on the main stem. We're doing the consumptive use portions. And so as such, we're doing an inventory of all the ditches in the valley above a certain size to just figure them out and where the problems are. And everybody that owns a ditch will get a pamphlet or a book on their ditch, which will help them in turn figure out what they need to do.
And apply for funding.
And apply for funding. To try to preserve water, but to also to prove that that we're short of water too, as is everybody else.
Yeah, that's a conversation that's been going on since before I was alive.
All of us.
Yeah, the whole question about Eastern Colorado versus Western Colorado. Of course, the argument you always hear is, well, Western Colorado has a majority of the water. Eastern Colorado has a majority of the population. And obviously, that's equalizing a little bit as time goes on.
Well, and we have to deliver so much water down to the lower basin states, too. And it's a very complicated, deal. But the Colorado River Roundtables, who wrote, well, the roundtables, there's one for every watershed. And this is the Colorado River Watershed, along with the Colorado River District, where we're operating under them, and they have grants. And that's what we're using to write this plan for our farmers and our producers.
You said all ditches in this area, in the Colorado, the Middle Colorado Watershed, above a certain size. What is that number?
So we're looking at ditches that are 10 cubic feet per second.
Okay.
Or larger. And pre-compact, so 1922, ditches established before that and incorporated, stuff like that.
Okay. Again, if you represent a ditch company or a private ditch, I suppose that'd be a pretty large private ditch, but you never know.
Well, the small ones could be taken care of by Jonathan or somebody, and they're also up for, there's cost share things for them too,
right,
on small projects.
As my dad would say, they can't say yes until you ask. Phone number is 945-5494 if you have any questions about that. Speaking of the round tables and the basin compacts that we've been talking about for the last, 5 years or so, here everything seemed like it was coming together with the upper basin states kind of getting all of their information together. And then all of a sudden California says, wait, hold on, never mind. Any predictions about what might happen with that in the future?
They have 4 days now to figure it out. If they don't,
isn't this like the third deadline, though?
It may be. The feds are going to step in and write the plan if we can't all agree on one.
That's dangerous.
Do you think that they would accept what has already been done in Colorado and Utah? Or do you think that they are going to completely wipe the slate clean and start over with their own thing and say, forget what you did, all the hard work over the last several years?
We don't know.
Yeah,
I think they'll stick with what has already been agreed upon by the upper basin.
Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. You never know. Anything else anybody else would like to add? More resources for anybody that's listening, for landowners. And again, a landowner in some cases could be just a garden. You know, a number of things that are available through.
We do a small acreage workshop.
Small acreage workshop
every year.
In May, right?
In May, I believe. Are we doing it this year? I'm not sure if we are. Anyway, you can call Sherry at the NRCS at 945-5494.
Sherry, who holds everything together.
Right,
yeah. Who is in
charge, really. We do a water law in a nutshell, too. We offer that, I don't know, whether once or twice a year, where a new landowner could come in and learn a little bit about their water rights.
Sure. I wonder if Aaron Clay is going to continue doing that now that he's retired, though. It would be interesting to see.
Well, we have another board member that could probably take the job over
on our board.
She's qualified.
Sarah Dunn is a water attorney, and sits on our board and does a lot. At least she gives us
provides
a lot of
legal,
information.
Free legal advice.
It's great.
Right.
It's great to have somebody there that can tell
That's
you
pretty
what.
Unusual.
Yeah.
We are so fortunate to have Sarah.
Yes.
She's great. Yeah. Again, phone number is 945-5494, so we'll probably talk about that small acreage workshop in a conversation at some point in the future. In the meantime, thanks, gentlemen, for your efforts in keeping these conservation districts going. You know, it's kind of where the rubber meets the road as far as farming is concerned. You know, trying to conserve as much as possible because we're not getting any more vacant land for the most part.
We're trying to bring new generation in, you know, kids, younger kids into agricultural, you know, because it seems like it's dying out. The average age of most ranchers is in the 60s, and it's good to get younger generation into it, especially in this valley where we can keep agriculture growing. And
right. The long history of it. Well, who wants to work a 13-hour day and in this day and age and still have a full-time job?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now is case in point. It's the roughest calving year we've had in 20 years, 30 years. Yeah. It's, but, you know, as farmers, we're never happy. There's either too much moisture or not enough. So,
seems like my grandpa told me a poem about that once. If it's hot, he wants it cold. And if it's cold, he wants it hot. And I can't remember the way the rest. Charles could probably tell us here once we.
I've heard it.
You know what I'm talking about anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again, guys.
We'll
talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.